Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Friday, April 5th. We'll talk first today about the U.S. response to the killing of the seven World Central Kitchen aid workers in Gaza. This is a developing story. And if even this time the Biden administration is saying different things than the Netanyahu administration, but then continuing to be complicit in the actions they criticize. Here is Pentagon spokesman John Kirby yesterday appearing to make a direct threat regarding sending more bombs.
If there's no changes to their policy and their approaches, then there's going to have to be changes to ours.
But that was just an implication that something would change regarding military aid. He didn't say what would change. And we've heard that kind of thing before. On March 22nd, the Washington Post had a headline, Biden administration gauges Israeli compliance with laws of war. The article said the State Department had received Israel's written assurances that its use of U.S.-supplied weapons in the Gaza war has not violated international or U.S. laws in its conduct of the war and protection of civilians, including the provision of sufficient aid. That was a quote. And the article said a group of 17 Democratic senators was calling on the Biden administration to reject Israel's claims amid the growing debate in Washington over whether the United States should suspend arms transfers. That was on March 22nd. On the 29th, another Washington Post article reported Biden approval of a new arms shipment to Israel that hadn't been made public. Yesterday, the Washington Post had another story headlined, U.S. approved more bombs to Israel on day of World Central Kitchen strikes. That one says the Biden administration signed off on thousands more bombs to Israel despite global condemnation of the IDF's killing of seven World Central Kitchen employees. It says the U.S. government has the authority to suspend an arms package anytime before delivery, but it has not done so in this case. So the pressure is on in Israel, obviously, to change its actions toward non-combatants in Gaza. And the pressure is on in Washington on President Biden. On MSNBC this morning, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, a leader on foreign policy, called for the first time for an immediate pause in the military campaign.
I do not believe that opening up a new crossing into Gaza is enough. I was at AmeriCares, a Connecticut-based emergency relief organization. They send medicines into Gaza. They have suspended operations, they and their partners on the ground, not because of a lack of crossings into Gaza, but because they simply believe that the danger to aid workers now is too high. We have seen over 200 aid workers killed inside Gaza. So without a pause in military operations, I just don't think you are going to be able to save lives. I think right now there needs to be a temporary halt so that we can get food and medicine, emergency supplies spread throughout Gaza in a way to save lives.
Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut on MSNBC this morning. And now the Washington Post has a story headlined, Biden warns Netanyahu the situation in Gaza is unacceptable. It says Biden told Netanyahu on the phone yesterday that the United States would reassess its policy if Israel doesn't take immediate steps to address the disastrous humanitarian situation, as the article puts it. But so far, no cancellation of that arms shipment that the Washington Post reported the other day was approved still after the bombing of the World Central Kitchen 7. This shipment that includes 2,000-pound bombs, as have been used in mass casualty events in Gaza these past 6 months, according to the Post. And listeners, your opinions are up to you. You can judge Biden as doing the wrong thing, or you can judge him as walking a difficult line, you know, in just the right way. But the reporting is that the cycle of tougher and tougher language, but the same funneling of arms, is continuing apace, at least for the moment. We'll talk to a Washington Post White House reporter who's been on this beat in just a second. But there's one other aspect to this to touch on first. The presidential election campaign is in full swing after all. So there's the question, how different would Donald Trump's policy be if he were to become president? And here's part of the contrast. If Biden is saying to Israel, go slower in this war, Trump, on the Hugh Hewitt radio show yesterday, said, go faster.
It is what it is, and this horrible thing happened. And what I said very plainly is, get it over with, and let's get back to peace and stop killing people. And that's a very simple statement. Get it over with. They got to finish what they finish. They have to get it done. Get it over with, and get it over with fast, because we have to. You have to get back to normalcy and peace.
What's your advice to Netanyahu beyond get it over with in a hurry?
Well, that's all the advice you can give. I mean, that's the advice. You got to get it over with, and you have to get back to normalcy.
Trump with conservative talk show host Hugh Hewitt yesterday. With us now, Washington Post White House reporter Yasmin Abutaleb. Yasmin, thanks so much for coming on. When I know the story is continuing to develop around you today, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
You know, I want to start with that Trump clip. And I realize you cover the White House, not the Trump campaign. But can you make a contrast between what Trump is saying and what Biden is saying? It seems to me that Trump is getting some headlines this morning that are misleading, actually, because they focus on him saying the war is a PR disaster for Israel, as if he's criticizing the war policy. And he did say the war is a PR disaster for Israel, but he only said it is that because Israel is releasing a lot of footage of bombings of apartment buildings as success stories, but it actually looks bad to the world, not good. But he didn't say stop bombing apartment buildings. He said stop releasing the video of it. And we heard him say in the clip that the path to peace and normalcy, as he called it, is to get it over with faster, which is exactly what Netanyahu wants to do, based on all the reporting I've seen. Just keep going hard into Rafah to get the rest of the Hamas fighters, despite the humanitarian consequences for civilians that everybody thinks would flow from that. So I think these headlines that suggest even Trump is distancing himself from Netanyahu's war effort are thoroughly misleading and exactly backwards. I don't know if you can comment on that. But as a White House reporter, can you contrast what Trump is saying with what Biden is saying?
Absolutely. I think there are a couple important nuances and distinctions to make. So I think you laid it out really well, where Trump is saying, get it over with because this is terrible for Israel's public relations, and they're rapidly losing global support because of the way they have conducted this war. But he's not saying after this, you need to really work towards a pathway to a two-state solution, or he's not even saying you need to limit civilian casualties. When he's saying get it over with fast, it's sort of up to the reader or the listener to read that how they might, which is, I think, the case with a lot of statements Trump makes, where the policy itself is very muddled and people can kind of read into it what they want. But you could look at that as him saying, level Gaza to the ground, but do it quickly, don't prolong the war. Whereas the Biden administration, I think their policy has become increasingly contradictory the longer the war has gone on. The Biden administration right now is specifically opposed to the promised Israeli large-scale invasion of Rafah, where about 1.5 million Palestinians are sheltering in really horrific conditions and in tents and just with no homes because they fled there under Israeli orders. But the U.S. is obviously very worried about a large-scale invasion there because of the mass civilian casualties that would inevitably ensue. And I think it's important to note that it's not as if attacks and bombings have stopped over the last few weeks as they've been fighting over what a Rafah invasion would look like, but they are still debating what exactly that looks like, how you take out what they say are the remaining Hamas battalions in Rafah. I think Trump is saying, just finish this up. I don't care how you do it, but I don't want to keep talking about this war because it's terrible for you. But not really saying how to do that or what that means or even including any warnings or urging Israel to limit civilian casualties or allow in more aid or address what has become an absolutely catastrophic humanitarian situation. He's not addressing that in any form.
Yeah. And Trump did say the words, in that clip, stop killing people. But if you listen to the whole thing, he's not saying stop. He's not saying time for a pause like Chris Murphy is saying. He's really saying finish killing people and get it over with that way. Yasmin, your article on Biden's phone call with Netanyahu yesterday, what's your understanding of what they said to each other?
So the White House provided a summary of the call, and then White House spokesman John Kirby came out and answered a number of questions about the tenor of the call. I think what the White House wanted to be the very clear takeaway is that for the first time, Biden was, it was so vague that it's not entirely clear what it means. But the way everyone read it is that Biden was threatening to condition aid or reassess the U.S.'s approach to Israel, which so far for the past 6 months has been unconditional aid and support. Yeah, there's been tougher rhetoric over the last 2 months and obviously public moments of frustration with Netanyahu and the Israeli government. But up till now, the U.S. has not fundamentally changed its unconditional support of Israel. So Biden was saying that if Netanyahu did not immediately, and Kirby later came out and clarified that meant in the coming hours and days, did not immediately take concrete steps to better protect aid workers, to better protect civilians, to address the disastrous humanitarian situation, that the U.S. would have to reassess its support of Israel and its policy towards Israel. However, in the same vein, they said Israel is facing threats from Iran and Hezbollah, and the U.S.'s support in the face of those threats remains ironclad. So it is notable that this is the first time Biden has threatened in any shape or form to even be willing to assess U.S. support of Israel. But I think what we know from our reporting, and I think is very clear by the policy over the last several months, is this administration is extremely unwilling to pull back support for Israel, no matter how defiant Netanyahu becomes or how frustrated or angry they become with the way Israel's prosecuting the war. So they gave themselves a lot of room to sort of define what it means to reassess U.S. support. And we know Israel announced some steps last night, like opening a new port, opening a new crossing. But I think the issue with that is the distribution of aid on the ground in Gaza is disastrous. There has been a collapse of law and order, especially in northern Gaza. They've defunded UNRWA, which was the humanitarian aid organization best positioned to distribute aid within Gaza. It's obviously become deadly for aid workers. You played the clip from Chris Murphy. We know World Central Kitchen, a number of these organizations have suspended their operations. So the U.S. commended these steps Israel took to open crossings, but I think the even bigger challenge and problem is actually distributing the aid within Gaza, and it's not clear how Israel is going to address that.
Right. And the Chris Murphy clip did respond very explicitly, especially at the beginning of the clip, to those announcements that Israel made that you just mentioned, that they're going to open a port, they're going to open another land route, they're going to allow more coming in from Jordan. And Chrissy Murphy said that's not enough and called for an immediate pause, as he put it, in the war. And here's a question from a listener that's come in on a text message, and this is a fair question. The listener says, so Israel should stop and not force Hamas to release any hostages? So is your understanding of what Chris Murphy is calling for, and again, I understand you're a White House reporter, not a congressional reporter, but it sounds like rather than wait for a ceasefire negotiation between Israel and Hamas that includes hostage and prisoner exchanges, Murphy seemed in that appearance on MSNBC to be saying to Israel, just stop for a while. Hamas is weakened enough that you can just stop for a while right now to avoid an even bigger humanitarian catastrophe and stop making these kinds of mistakes, if they were mistakes, like that killed the 7 workers from World Central Kitchen. I'm just curious if you hear it that way.
I actually don't hear it that way, because in the summary of the White House call, the president called for an immediate ceasefire, and I thought this was very interesting language, said Netanyahu needed to empower his negotiating team to come to an agreement on a ceasefire, which indicates that they feel Netanyahu has not been, and obviously there are multiple parties in this, right? This is not to say Hamas has not been an obstacle or Hamas has been operating in good faith on these ceasefire talks, but he is clearly pinning much of the blame on Netanyahu when he says, empower your negotiators to come to a deal to release many of the remaining hostages and have a 6-week or however many weeks ceasefire on the ground. So there has been immense frustration with the ceasefire talks, which the administration has been talking about since January. That's been going on for about 3 months. At one point, Biden said he thought a deal would be struck within a couple of days. That hasn't happened. Israel and Hamas are so far apart on the talks. And what Biden seems to be indicating is that Israel needs to loosen some of its demands to approve or sign on to a deal that would see the release of many of the remaining hostages in exchange for that longer-term ceasefire. And I think it's important to note that within Israel, there's immense anger at Netanyahu that people on all sides of the political spectrum do not feel he is doing enough or prioritizing bringing home the hostages. And that is a feeling in the U.S. as well. So I think you would be hard pressed to find a U.S. politician who would not also prioritize the release of the hostages. But there is a growing sense that Netanyahu himself is not prioritizing that and that he needs to.
We're getting some calls on the question of what would be different, hypothetically, if Trump were in the White House right now or next year. Mike in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi, hey, thanks for taking my call. To address that question specifically, I'm just going to let Jared Kushner answer. And in his words, which I believe would be Trump's words, which I believe are also Netanyahu's thoughts, because I think they're all incestually related. They want to level it. They want to tear it to the ground. That would be Trump's policy, waterfront property for everyone but the Palestinians, of course. And I will say that I say that as the son of an Israeli-born, proud Jew, yeshiva-educated American citizen. I don't know what Biden is doing is the best. I don't believe this started on October 7th, though those actions were horrendous and should be addressed. BB must go.
Thank you very much. Do you have the Jared Kushner quote in your head? Did he say something like Mike is attributing to him? And again, I realize you're not covering Trump. You're covering the White House. But in case you know.
No, Mike is absolutely right. There was a quote that it came out about a month after Jared Kushner said it at some kind of Harvard forum where he said there could be valuable waterfront property in Gaza. And that, of course, ignited quite a bit of outrage because it sounded up. And he suggested that Israel move all the Palestinians in Gaza to the Israeli desert while they rebuilt this valuable property. And we know it is a minority in Israel, but it is a vocal minority from the likes of Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, these right-wing cabinet ministers that Netanyahu has that he's quite beholden to keep his coalition together, who are very much in favor of moving the Palestinians out of Gaza and resettling Israelis there. And so I think there is a fear. It's very hard to tell where Trump stands right now on his policy, but we know when he was in office, he gave Israel pretty much everything it wanted. They moved the embassy to Jerusalem, which previous presidents had been very reluctant to do because of how escalatory it could be. Jared Kushner, of course, played a key role in the Abraham Accords and in normalizing relations with a number of Arab countries. So I think it's unclear what a Trump administration would do to try to prevent if that's what whether it's a Netanyahu government or another government wanted to reoccupy Gaza or build Israeli settlements in Gaza, how they would address that. But Jared Kushner very clearly came out in favor of that.
The 7 World Central Kitchen aid workers' deaths are being treated so differently from tens of thousands of Palestinian bystanders. We hardly ever hear their names, like in this case, or see friends and relatives crying, like we saw a lot of Chef Jose Andres on television yesterday, or the same kind of reaction. It must be galling to Palestinians to be so invisible and considered as a mass not as thousands of actual individuals and as individual tragedies equally to these victims. And maybe they will be happy from their perspective. And of course, you know, we keep acknowledging there are many perspectives on this, Palestinian perspectives, Israeli perspectives, U.S. and other perspectives. But from that perspective, has anyone that you know of asked Biden about that, how differently these victims are being treated in terms of his policy reaction than whatever the number is, many, many, many thousands of civilian Palestinians?
Well, John Kirby was asked about this in the briefing room a couple times this week. And it's a really important point you made, because before the tragic killing of the World Central Kitchen workers, nearly 200 aid workers had been killed in Gaza throughout the war, most of them Palestinians working with the United Nations or UNRWA or other organizations. And this has been the deadliest conflict for aid workers, I think, on record. A senior UN official said that the death rate for aid workers was nearly three times that any other single conflict in a single year. So I think obviously the World Central Kitchen, the death of these workers should be getting the attention it is. I think there is a frustration among Palestinians, among Arabs and Muslims in the United States, that the similar killings of Palestinian aid workers throughout the war have not gotten the same kind of attention, the same kind of public outrage that the deaths of these workers have.
Yasmin Abu Talib, White House reporter for The Washington Post. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.